Okay. So I'm going to talk about cyclones and anticyclones and dynamos. So if we start off with a general fluid, in rotation that is subject to either a turbulence or a convective driving, the classical picture that we have is that of tall Taylor columns, okay, that are aligned with the axis of rotation, as I have drawn here. And these Taylor columns basically consist of cyclones and anticyclonic vortices that alternate in the fluid. And often it is the case in fluid mechanics that the vorticities in these columns are not the same. So there is an asymmetry between these cyclones and anticyclones. And the typical example of that is in rotating turbulence itself, where it is found that both these cyclones and anticyclonic columns have the same strength when the Rossby number is small. But once you increase the Rossby number gradually to a value of order unity, the anticyclones gradually fade away, and only cyclones remain in the fluid. And this very interesting observation was first found by Bartolo and his co-authors and his colleagues in 1994 in a computational experiment, where they found that only cyclones remained system. And they argued that the anticyclones became really unstable as the Rossby number increased. And since then, many experiments also have been done on this subject, and still it's not entirely clear to people why exactly this asymmetry arises. And another example of this asymmetry is in shallow water turbulence, where as you increase the Froude number, which is basically the ratio of inertial to gravity effects in the fluid, anticyclonic vortices start becoming stronger and stronger, and they have used this observation to explain the anticyclonic vortices that appear on the surface of Jupiter, for example. But I'm not going to talk about these two, just to demonstrate that these asymmetries are not uncommon in fluid mechanics. Here I'm going to talk about rotating convection-driven dynamos, where we do find a dominant anticyclonic vorticity in many numerical simulations. And this asymmetry arises as a result of a balance between the Lorentz and the Coriolis forces. And this has been obtained in a few numerical simulations, and this is one example. So in this talk, I will simply discuss this third point, and I will examine whether this asymmetry between the cyclone and the anticyclone is it just a feature of this dynamo, or whether it's a crucial ingredient of the magnetic field generation process itself. And what role does it play? And to understand that, we probably need to answer the second question. That is, if I try to eliminate this asymmetry, if I try to disturb it or neutralize it, what will happen to the field in the fluid? Now, to demonstrate what I'm talking about, I will define a vorticity skewness, which was defined in the context of rotating turbulence by Bartolo and co-authors. It's defined like that. So basically, this is a very powerful diagnostic in rotating fluids. So if this is negative, for example, it shows that the axial vorticity, omega z, is predominantly anticyclonic. If it's positive, obviously it is cyclonic, and if it is zero on average, it tells you that cyclones and anticyclones are of the same strength in the fluid. So I start off with a rotating convective dynamo state. I won't give you the details of the equations. They'll be fairly familiar to you. Basically, what I'm trying to do here is a moderately supercritical dynamo, which is Rayleigh number 6 times critical. I solve the fully 3D MHD equations of temperature, velocity, and magnetic field in a spherical shell. The Prandtl number and the magnetic Prandtl number are set equal to unity, and the Ekman number, which is nu over omega L square, is a fairly low value of 10 to the minus 4. So I start off, I plot this vorticity skewness as a function of the diffusion time. It's magnetic diffusion here. So you can see that it's strongly anticyclonic here because it's negative. It's approximately minus 0.3. And at this point, I stopped time-stepping the induction equation. I set B equals 0. And what happens is that the vorticity skewness simply jumps and saturates at a value of approximately 0, which tells you that the cyclones and anticyclones are approximately of the same strength. Now, you could also study the converse of this problem. If I start off with a purely convective state, okay, where there is no magnetic field, with the same set of parameters, and then I impose an equatorially anti-symmetric B phi on the flow. Okay, so what happens is the convective rolls, the Taylor columns here, they grab hold of that B phi and convert it into a BR, a radial magnetic field. And then in the final state, you do get a dipolar magnetic field in the end. And in this process, the magnetic energy increases and saturates, whereas the vorticity skewness decreases from 0 and at a negative value. So it works both ways. So the magnetic field definitely changes the vorticity distribution of the fluid, and that is quite clear-cut in both these cases. Now for an overview of what exactly is going on here, we need to look at the force balances that create this asymmetry in the first place. So here what I've plotted, we have to start off with the azimuthal magnetic field that is near the equatorial plane. It is equatorially anti-symmetric, as you can see. And this is an average taken over both the azimuthal angle phi as well as the time t. And you can see that there is a concentration of B phi just above and below the equatorial plane. And this B phi actually drives a radial electric current JS. Okay, I'm dealing with cylindrical polar coordinates here, S phi z, because I'm basically focusing attention in the region very near the equatorial plane, where it's more convenient to treat the problem in cylindrical polar coordinates rather than spherical polar coordinates. Okay, so JS is the radial electric current, and it's got a strongly negative value here that comes from the axial gradients in B phi. And there is also a JZ, an axial electric current, that comes from the radial gradient in B phi. Now, what happens is that these electric currents interact with the magnetic field to produce a force that actually drives a radially inward fluid that is near the inner boundary, which is US. As you can see, the negative values are shown in blue, and positive values are shown in red. And this US actually interacts with the background rotation to produce a strongly prograde flow, which is again near the inner boundary. So this is actually a direct consequence of the J cross B force in this problem. So if I take a section that is just above the equator and then look from above, I'll see cells like these, where the cells marked A are anticyclonic and cells marked C are cyclonic. And so we have a flow that is going in and then cyclonically as here. So these cells marked A will be stronger than the cells marked C. And so that is the origin of this anticyclonic vorticity in the problem. If I look at the force balance a bit more carefully, if I take the curl of the momentum equation, okay, and take the z component of that and average over both phi and time, then you'll see something quite interesting. It's the curl J cross B here is actually balanced by the Coriolis forces here. And the viscous diffusion term also enters this force balance. So had this term not been there, what we would have obtained is a classical Ekman layer balance. But the presence of this, J cross B force changes the velocity profile near the inner boundary. Now this curl J cross B has got origins in dj dz. If I plot dj dz in place of that, I would get exactly the same profile. So what this tells you is that the gradients in U are essentially dictated by gradients in J. So what happens here is that the electric currents change direction from radial to axial or vice versa here, and that is actually causing the concentration of these forces near the boundary. Now, this effect also gives rise to an added helicity in this magnetic case, but here I have plotted the maximum and minimum values of the Z helicity averaged over phi and time. The maximum values are in solid lines and the minimum values are in dashed lines. You can see that this is the dynamo case and this is the non-magnetic case, and you can see that there is an added helicity that is being actually created by this balance and which is distinctly absent in the non-magnetic case. This is not entirely new, because we have seen that Busa in 1976 had actually a paper which says that additional helicity is actually being generated by the magnetic field itself, and it is that helicity which sustains the magnetic field. And we had a talk quite similar to this yesterday, where it was said that the magnetic instabilities actually lead to a very special tailored velocity field, which is conducive to dynamo action. So this is what's happening here. Now, how important is this helicity for dynamo action can be seen only if we wipe out this helicity from the problem. So to do that, we have to think of ways of cancelling out this Lorentz Coriolis balance at the inner boundary. To do that, what I've done is I've imposed a zonal flow near the inner boundary through a forcing term in the momentum equation. It's a cyclonic flow. So that cyclonic flow interacts with the background rotation and produces a radially outward velocity. So the aim of this exercise is to create a flow field that opposes the radially inward flow that is generated by the Lorentz force. And the hope is that it would cancel out the effect of this flow from the Lorentz force. Okay, and what happens then is that the magnetic energy suddenly falls and saturates at a very low value. And on this axis, I have shown the vorticity's skewness. It increases from minus 0.3, and it saturates at a value which is just about zero. So the fall in the magnetic energy is accompanied by the rise in the vorticity's skewness. So this shows you that if you try to disturb the force balance here by cancelling out the effect of the J cross B force, it will have a significant effect on the dynamo action itself. Okay. Now, if I do the reverse of that and try to impose an anticyclonic flow near the ICB, that will actually give rise to a radially inward flow that aids the radially inward flow created by the Lorentz force. So we would expect this to actually strengthen dynamo action, and indeed it does, but not significantly. We get a magnetic energy that is twice the initial magnetic energy. So it does have an effect if you try to generate stronger anticyclonic cells by this. But you would also expect the vorticity skewness to decrease further, but that does not happen, because the vorticity is made up of two terms, that and that. If you try to augment that, this term also increases. So this contributes to some positive omega z, because du phi ds in this case will be positive, and so that compensates, that offsets this effect, and but still we get a negative value of the vorticity skewness. So the broad message that comes out of these two tests is that creation of anticyclonic vortices will definitely strengthen dynamo action, whereas annihilation of anticyclonic vortices will try to kill off dynamo action, or at least weaken that significantly. Now, if you try to create a strong anticyclonic forcing near the ICB, near the inner boundary, then that would not work, because the zonal flow will take over and the columnar structure does not sustain anymore. And we have the magnetic energy falling to zero and the vorticity skewness saturates at a value near zero. Now, we could also do the same. You could also control the vorticity skewness in a dynamo by magnetic means. So to do that, I start off. I first look at the profile of B phi in the dynamo, and then try to perturb that near the equatorial plane through a field that is shown in red in this figure. And the magnitude of this field is quite small compared to the dynamo magnetic field itself. And I've chosen a decay length scale that corresponds to the decay length scale of the dynamo magnetic field. And the sign of that is opposite to the sign of the magnetic field. And the aim of that is to drive electric currents that would cancel off the force balance at the boundary. And what happens then is that the magnetic energy falls and the vorticity skewness increases. And which is similar to what we find, but if I keep integrating, what happens, the magnetic energy comes to a minimum and again picks up and saturates at a value, and during which process the vorticity skewness decreases and saturates at a value. So what happens here is that when you perturb B phi, I start off with a strongly dipolar field, so the field gradually starts getting chaotic. And at this point, we have a near reversal in the field, and then the reversed field gets stronger and stronger, and eventually the reversal is complete. And during this process, what happens is that if this is the energy contained in the M equals naught component, this is the ratio of the energy contained in the M equals naught component to the total kinetic energy. So we have a sudden onset of zonal flow at this point. When the field reverses, and here what happens is at this point when the vorticity skewness is naught, we have this peak zonal flow, and once the columnar structure is reestablished, then again the zonal flow comes back, and we don't have much zonal flow. So now remember, these things happen for a very moderately supercritical Rayleigh number of only 6. And so these kind of zonal flows are usually found in dynamos which are strongly convective, or usually pushed into the inertial regime. And we don't do anything of that sort here. We just perturb B phi near the equatorial plane, and that triggers a chain of events that produce a spontaneous burst of zonal flow and back to columnar convection again. So what this tells you is that it's not absolutely essential to have a strong Rayleigh number to have interesting things happening to the magnetic field. If you could come up with an event that perturbs the value of B phi near the equatorial plane, that would significantly offset the vorticity distribution in the fluid, and that holds the key for many interesting features, which may include reversals as well. This is a plot of the electric density, current density, which also is reversing. It's probably not very important. I'll skip that. Just go to a last slide before I finish. This is a quite a different case where I actually modify the vorticity skewness in a dynamo through an external boundary in homogeneity. And this is the locked dynamo problem that is motivated by the problem of core-mantle coupling. And F represents the magnitude of the thermal inhomogeneity that I apply at the boundary. And here, I've used a dynamo which is only marginally supercritical so that the boundary effects have a significant effect on the flow. If I increase the inhomogeneity, the flow structure completely changes from a multi-columnar structure to a dominant two downwelling structure, because I have imposed a Y22 boundary condition. Variation in the heat flux. And what happens here is that for this case, for F equals 1.6, the vorticity skewness is quite is a strongly negative. It's not very strong, but it's still a negative value of minus 0.15. Whereas for this case, the cyclones and the anticyclones are of the same strength. And so in this case, the magnetic energy is quite strong. Whereas if I reduce the inhomogeneity, the magnetic energy rapidly falls to zero. So what this tells you is that the vorticity skewness that is generated by this particular boundary condition has a strong effect on magnetic field generation itself. And This is the helicity I've shown here, and the helicity profile also changes with the inhomogeneity that I apply at the boundary. So I'll conclude by saying that the vorticity skewness with preferred anticyclonic vorticity is produced in a dynamo, and the origin of this phenomenon is near the equatorial plane, where you can find a Lorentz Coriolis force balance. And this this preferred anticyclonic vorticity also generates an additional helicity in the dynamo, which in turn supports dynamo action. And this asymmetry is found to be crucial for dynamo action. Okay, if this asymmetry is suppressed by any means, dynamo action will either weaken or fail. And any source of anticyclonic vorticity, whether it's magnetic, which is in the system, or is it external, which could be thermal, it can, or it could be even mechanical stirring, can amplify a seed magnetic field. Thank you.
You know, that's very interesting. Was there a fundamental reason very early on why that skewness is defined as a third moment?
Well, there is no fundamental reason, because it's that's the only way you can see the difference in sign.
Well, you can see it with that in the first moment. I mean, just the vorticity. If you're just looking for the sign, I just wonder if there's something deeper there, but you cube the vorticity, do you not?
What else could you come up with? Just integral of omega z dv does not show the complete picture. Whereas this is, I chose this primarily because it's a popular diagnostic in rotating turbulence, where they actually calculate the skewness. But you could use, for example, omega z to the fourth over something else.
An odd power, okay. All right, it's a technical reason.
Yes.
Just one very quick one. That third conclusion there, you say dipolar dynamo action. Do you find primarily dipolar dynamo action when there's strong asymmetry between the anticyclonic and cyclonic?
Yes. I have investigated only dipolar dynamos, but I'm sure that if you try to go to a quadrupolar and other dipole, then this this asymmetry may not play a big part, because this asymmetry defines only the
right. So it's really this asymmetry which is crucial for the strong dipolar character.
Yeah, because it's the anticyclone that actually concentrates flux at high latitude. So
I think it's better.